You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are well into August now. It's getting closer, and we suddenly realized that we have less than a month to squeeze in all of our remaining topics. So we're going to be putting the pedal to the metal starting tonight, aren't we?
We are. We got a lot of games to talk about.
We've got to do the rest of our season preview of our opponents, and then in a separate thing, what we always do is go through the 14 teams of the conference and kind of predict how each one will do, how many games they'll win and lose through the magic of the barbecue. So we'll have two episodes on that coming up later in August as well. So that's at least three more episodes we got to get in after tonight. But tonight we need to get in. We're going to go ahead and do, you know, let me start over. 2 weeks ago, we did the first three games previews. We looked at Louisville, Jacksonville State, and LSU, thinking we had lots of time to do all the other nine games. But what we realized is after we did the match game, you perhaps heard of that little debacle, exercise. And how would you describe the match game episode, John? You were intimately acquainted with it.
It was fun. It may be the silliest episode we've done, but it was very fun.
And that's saying something. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad it was fun. I think people tended to like it. But after we did that one, now we decided just to go ahead and do games 4, 5, 6, and 7, 8, and 9 tonight. So we'll go all the way through the Texas A&M game as our brief previews tonight. And then we'll come back and do Georgia and Idaho, whatever the 11th game is, and Alabama in another episode, and then we'll get our barbecue episodes in. So that should pretty much finish off August and get us right up till opening weekend. So that'll be pretty cool. This is going to be a very, you know, we've lamented the dead period for weeks and weeks now. Well, it's getting quite live now, isn't it?
No, time is flying. The season will be here before you know it.
Yeah. So let's see. Up front, the only other announcement, couple of things as usual about my appearances in the state of Alabama and elsewhere. I appreciate everybody that came out. We sold some Decades of Dominance as well as a few of my other books at the big event in Hoover on Saturday. That was really awesome. Those people were so nice. They treated Bobby Nash and me and Catherine Harbor like celebrities. Man, they fed my family and me this spectacular barbecue they got from some local Birmingham barbecue place. John, if you had tasted this this barbecue, well, A, it made me want to predict the outcomes of SEC football. So it was good barbecue, right?
All right.
But also, if you tasted that barbecue, it would make you want to run out and write a bunch of books and get invited to do that next year if they did it again, because it was really nice. And those folks were really cool. They had a beautiful facility that was. The Hoover Library, man, it's like a convention center, and it's brand new, just gorgeous. So anyway, really great people there. The other thing is, in terms of me being down there, is I will be in Huntsville in October, and I'll mention this a couple more times before we get there, but coming up later in October at the Rocket City Literary Festival, which is going to be at the Von Braun Center in Huntsville, and that should be a really fun event too. I'm going to have a whole booth to myself. I'll have everything I've ever written there. It'll be a good opportunity because I don't really spend a lot of time in North Alabama. I'm usually in Birmingham, you know, or Montgomery, Sylacauga, Auburn, that area. I don't spend a lot of time up in the Huntsville area. So, but I've been there several times before, and I've got a few friends there. So it'll be nice to get back down to North Alabama for a change in October. And I'll have more details on the exact dates and everything when we get closer. So any other announcements before we get into the Auburn news this week?
No.
Okay. Well, let's see. Fall practice.
I know. It's right. It's here. I think it starts tomorrow is the first day. We're very excited about it and be exciting to see, you know, once everybody gets out there and it'll be a few days where they're really hitting pads and there's contact and stuff. But it's always exciting when everybody shows up and we'll probably learn some things, you know, if something happened in the off season or whatever, somebody's injured or something, this is when we'll learn it. So,
yeah.
Should have a lot more information in 24 hours from now than we do now.
It's kind of become a, something of a formality, right? I mean, most of the players are there all summer. You get the freshmen maybe, but I mean, most of the upperclassmen have been there. They've been practicing informally and you know,
like even the freshmen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a day when, you know, years ago when the fall would start and the players would show up and you'd roll the dice to see who was out of shape and who was in shape and all that. But now they pretty well know everybody's going to be in shape and ready to go. I mean, that's my impression of it anyway.
Well, and there's always the last minute, you know, didn't qualify issue or something.
Right, right.
Tennessee ran into that with one of their players this week. But,
oh, how tough.
The word is everything was looking good so far. So
good, good. I neglected to say this when I was talking about that barbecue that I had. When I was sitting there in that library in Birmingham, and they rolled in that barbecue. You know what I said?
What?
I'm going to consume all of this at the same time because I am a free America.
That's what I said, John.
Nice.
and that's what we're also going to say when it's time for the barbecue episode. So fall practice underway. What are we expecting to see different than we don't? You know, what are we expecting to learn new from fall practice? I mean, I know that some of the starting spots are already sewn up, and I know that some of them we don't think will really get sewn up until like the third or fourth game. So what strikes you as something we could actually see develop new during fall practice?
Well, I think one of the questions is always which freshman will play, freshman will head towards redshirting. And I think that's always one of the most important questions during fall practice. And I think the other part is, you know, we have a completely new defensive staff, basically. So, you know, their evaluation of the players and as we go through fall practice and who's ready and does somebody need to move positions or anything, I think that'll be something worth watching too. So. But really, which freshman could step up and help this year right away, and then and also kind of on the defensive side, who's going to make a push for playing time maybe that didn't have it before, or was, you know, redshirted last year or something else, but is going to take advantage of the opportunity with the new coaching staff.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, do you think that maybe we'll know a little bit more about how – well, see, I say this, and then I think about how Gus operates and the staff operates. I was going to say we might know some more about how – I still haven't learned his name. Is it Jason Smith, the quarterback, receiver, athlete?
Yes.
That's the kind of – you know me. That's the kind of player that always intrigues me. I was fascinated by Trevon Reed when he first arrived, you know, later not as much. But when he first arrived, you know – it's these sort of multiple impact utility players that always fascinate me, and I'm always anxious to see how they're used. Unfortunately, the answer usually is they're not really used that much, or they're not used the way we think. So I'm kind of like wanting him to emerge and everybody be like, oh, we're going to use him in 50 different ways to confuse the and terrify the opposition. But I'm afraid it's actually going to be he'll get in for like two plays a game the first half of the season and zero plays a game the second half. Isn't that the way it always goes, though?
Sometimes that's how it is, yes.
They come up with these packages. We're going to put a – when Gus says, well, we're going to put a package in for him, what that usually means is he will play three times against in the opening game. He'll play three plays against Jacksonville State. He'll play one play against LSU, and he will not be seen the rest of the season. That's what a package usually means when Gus says that.
Sometimes I think it really does mean they'll they're going to get the guy the ball.
Well,
so
I hope so. I hope so. What else can we kind of look to from fall? I don't want to go too long on this. We got a lot of other stuff to get to, but I just want to make sure we give full attention to fall practice. I mean, what else are you expecting to have come out of it?
Well, I mean, you know, the guys who were hurt last year, you know, didn't go completely full speed during the spring. They will during fall practice. So that'll be, you know, something keeping on Kozon and Carl Lawson as they get into full, you know, contact. That'll be a big thing. And then this is the first time we really got to see the transfer guys play.
Yeah.
So, you know, Blake Countess, Golson, and then Trey Matthews.
Trey Matthews, yeah.
All three of them.
And Javon Robinson.
That's right. And the junior college guys like Robinson and Jason Smith. So all of those guys, I mean, those guys, you know, I look at Robinson like the freshman to me, he's an unknown quantity, but those other guys have all played at the SEC, you know, at major college levels before. But they have to fit in with this staff and this team. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how ready they are to play. And I'm excited about all of them. I think, you know, if one of the reasons you see, and I've said this before, one of the reasons that some people are down on Auburn is they just look at the number of starters and think that's the end of the story. But
right.
I think when you add in all these experienced players that are transferring in from other places, it really changes the equation. So,
or coming back from injury, you know, or something.
That's right.
Like that. Yeah.
The combination of those two groups makes a big difference.
Exactly. And that's unusual. You don't usually see that many players that don't count as returning starters, but almost could in a way. You know, it's just unusual to have this many on one team in one year, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's very different, but it's exciting. And it's to me, those are all guys that I'll be looking forward to spring practice to see how they're doing.
So do we expect to see Carl Lawson actually in uniform out on the field doing stuff for once finally? I mean, because
absolutely.
First, he was going to come back late in the season. Then he's going to be in the spring. He is yet to actually do anything other than rehab. I mean, I know he's been working his tail off rehabbing, but I mean, in terms of with the team, you know, he hasn't really gotten to do anything.
I mean, he practiced, but I think in terms of like contact and tackling people and stuff, I think they've been careful. And I think that was,
they
want to be cautious because he has all the ability in the world and they need him to be there, you know, opening week. And so, I think Muschamp is, you know, not going to have practices. He's not going to play people that can't practice. And they're not going to have practices, you know, this fall where, you know, before the season starts, where they're not physical. I think that's something they really want to do. So I think, you know, he's going to have plenty of time to get in there and hit some people. So
see, I'm just imagining that, like, instead of him actually playing, he rehabs and comes back, and then they give him like 3 blue flags or something, or orange flags. And like, if the other team makes a huge gain on a long pass, then Lawson can just step off the sideline and throw his little flag and say, "No, that was a 15-yard sack." See, so we get the impact without him actually being on the field. Does that sound like a good rule?
That's a nice idea for practice.
Okay. But for practice, oh, okay.
I don't see Muschamp actually going that direction.
We can't get the commissioner to let us try that in a game.
No, I don't think so.
Dang it! All right, well. All right, a couple of things real quick. Kevin Skarbinski had a column, but it was really a column talking about Brandon Marcello's columns. I mean, you got to love Skarbinski that not only does he find ways to write stuff originally that drives everybody crazy, then he finds a way to write an entire column talking about somebody else's column. but
he's scratchy from material sometimes.
Yeah, well, basically he found it newsworthy. This is what kills me, right? I mean, if Nick Saban says, you know, we're going to win a national championship in the next few years, nobody's writing a column about that. But if Brandon Marcello straight up asks Gus, will you win a national championship at Auburn? And Gus says yes, suddenly this is like fodder for headlines. How is that a story?
It's not a story.
I know. Well, here was his quote. I mean, you said before, I mean, we're not a big enough show quite yet to get Gus on here, but we can kind of have virtual Gus. So go ahead and ask Gus if we'll win a national championship at Auburn.
Will you win a national championship while at Auburn?
We feel like we will. That's what we think about every day. That's our goal.
this is a place that we have a chance to do that every year. That's there's probably only six or seven schools that can probably say that, and this is one of the six or seven. That's why I like it here. Plus the Waffle House, because we're blessed.
Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you, Virtual Gus.
It's getting better.
What I'm going to do, actually, I'm going to have Virtual Gus on the soundboard, so I won't have to do it anymore. I'll be able to just use technology, so we'll have Virtual Gus. I mean,
so you're going to record yourself doing the Gus saying like 100 different things?
No. I'm going to record Gus saying Gus things and then have that available. Just like for no apparent reason whatsoever, I can say,
my idea of a perfect government is one guy who sits in a small room at a desk, and the only thing he's allowed to decide is who to nuke.
See, I'll have Gus doing stuff like that for us. So that'll be good. Yeah. All right. One other bit of news before we get into our previews is that you may have heard that we powered up the big scoreboard the other day. There's actually a video on YouTube of them power of time. Have you seen it?
I have.
I posted it on our Facebook group too. A video of them spending the whole day powering up this massive scoreboard. And I have some audio here, John, that I recorded of the coaches and then like Jay Jacobs, and they're talking to Jay Jacobs about powering up the scoreboard and what it'll mean for us. Would you and the listeners like to hear this conversation I was able to record between Jay Jacobs and the athletic department about this? All right, here it goes.
Until this battle station is fully operational, we are vulnerable. If the rebels have obtained a complete technical readout of this station,
scoreboard,
it is possible, however unlikely, that they might find a weakness and exploit it.
We've analyzed their attack, sir, and there is a danger. Should I have your ship standing by?
Evacuate? In our moment of triumph? I think you overestimate their chances.
Stand by.
Okay, so that was that's how the meeting went. I have a feeling that like an Alabama fan or something must have gotten in there at the end with some kind of an evil plan. So I just tweeted to Jerry Hinnan, who had said something about it. This is where this all came from. Was Jerry introduced his little feature on it by using some Grand Moff Tarkin dialogue. And so I asked him, and I know Auburn fans will be grateful that I did this. I asked him, is there any chance that our scoreboard has a small, unshielded exhaust port? If so, we need to cover that sucker up immediately, okay? Tree Poisoner.
Oh.
Gets a photon. Yeah. If you give him a proton torpedo, we're in trouble. Because I'm pretty sure... What's his name? Tree Poisoner. That guy. Updike. I'm pretty sure Updike likes to bullseye womp rats.
I don't think he's allowed within 10 miles of this campus. So.
All right. Well, if he does, he'll find out.
It's a trap!
That's right. So.
Well, I was going to say, the only part of that I think is interesting is the fact that some people will... be amused by your comparison of Jay Jacobs to Grand Moff Tarkin.
I have no comment. I'm just leaving that alone. You said it, not me. Leaving it alone. Moving on. All right. Let's get into our opponent previews. How about?
Let's do that.
In the 5 minutes we have remaining. No, I'm just kidding. The first thing that jumped out at me about our opponents coming up in this segment is that not in this segment, in the previous one too, is that we have something of a tour of our former offensive coordinators this season.
We do.
I can think of two. I don't know if I missed any, but I know there's two. Bobby Petrino at Louisville. And who else do we welcome into the friendly confines of Jordan-Hare this fall?
Well, just wait till we get to that game, right?
Okay. All right. I just think it's kind of neat as a little aside. We'll get to it. All right.
Well, let me ask you a question now before we get into these. Which team led the SEC in total offense last season?
I saw your notes. That's the only way I knew.
Oh.
And I never ever would have gotten it. I never would have gotten it. So why don't you go ahead, because you can, if we're going to go in order, you can go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. John, what team led the SEC in total offense last year?
Mississippi State.
You have got to be kidding me.
Not only did they lead it, it wasn't close. And the only SEC offense in the last 6 or 7 years that was better than that one was the Johnny Manziel offense at A&M those years. So,
yeah, the Mississippi State's offense last year had more yards than Nick Marshall 2013, Trey Mason.
They had over 3,000 rushing and passing each last year. And they were one of only like three teams in the country to do it. I think it was them, Oregon, and Ohio State.
Man.
So, last year's Mississippi State team was a, you know, they had a very experienced defensive team. They had, you know, mm-hmm. Preston Smith and Bernardrick McKinley and a lot of good secondary guys. But their offense was really, really, really great. And the difference is this year, a lot of those guys are gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lost a lot of the offensive line, and they lost Josh Robinson, the running back.
Yeah, it's funny, as I was looking at Mississippi State to prepare for this, I think there's a lot of similarities between that Mississippi State team and like the 2010 Auburn team.
Right.
Because they had a great quarterback, they had a, you know, kind of a bowling ball running back, they had a veteran offensive line with a lot of experience, they had a solid group of linebackers, they had like one NFL kind of defensive lineman who made a bunch of plays. And, you know, and they made some big plays, and that this team wasn't nearly as successful as that Auburn team was. But I think there's something similar.
I wanted to say something about that. Yes. You know what that tells me?
What?
It tells me that if Cam had gone to Mississippi State instead of Auburn, he would not have won the national championship or the Heisman Trophy. Is that right?
I think you're right.
Because, like you say, if last year's team was so similar to 2010 Auburn, but it didn't go 14-0,
no.
And what does it say about Mississippi State that they can have all of that last year, and this year they are picked by many to finish last in the West?
Well, I think some part of that problem is somebody has to be picked to finish last, and people have a hard time choosing. And so I think
how much is this year's Mississippi State team like 2011 Auburn?
A lot, except the difference is if
they still got Dak.
I mean, I think to me it is a lot like 2011 Auburn in terms of the drop off. But the difference is with Dak, I think it's going to be a lot like one of those Eli Manning Ole Miss teams where they just have a great quarterback and nobody around him.
Yeah,
I mean, he has one really good receiver, but I think there's going to be a lot of him just running for his life, making plays and, you know, making stuff happen. But there's not enough around him to, you know, bring the whole team up to a level where it's competitive competing to win the West.
The difference too, that they get the quarterback back and not the running back. Whereas 2011 Auburn got the running back back, but not the quarterback. Uh-huh. They also – did they lose their good defensive lineman? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, Preston Smith, the guy that led the SEC in sacks, I believe, went in the NFL draft. He's gone. So, and they lost their great linebacker, McKinley, who was really the heart and soul of that defense. So, they got four starters back on offense, two of whom are Dak Prescott and Darunia Wilson, the really good receiver that gave us all kinds of problems. And they only got like three guys back on defense. So, they have a lot of junior college guys. They have a lot of guys who played last year, but – I think the drop off is going to be pretty big, and the West is so competitive. If you drop off even a little bit, you're in trouble.
Well, let's think about it. So Auburn went from 14-0 to 8-5 because, as everybody knows, Auburn's default mediocre year score is 8-5.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those have we had? A bajillion. And so Mississippi State, their drop off will be lower than that because they're starting lower than that. So are we thinking 6-6, 5-7?
I mean, I think with Prescott, I mean, 7-5, 6-6. I mean, yeah. I really do think they're, you know, if you had to pick one team to finish last in the West, they got to be it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, in the East, they might come in second, even with the returning starters they have. But I think in the West, you know, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, they don't, that they play one, you know, at Southern Miss, in, is there, you know, non-conference game, but other than that, they don't play anybody tough in non-conference, and their teams from the East are, you know, Missouri. They have to play at Missouri, and they play Kentucky at home.
Mississippi State, Missouri. That's an interesting matchup. That's one of those you just don't see every day, you know.
Nope.
That's an that's an interesting matching up. I mean, huh? Have they? I don't guess they probably even played before in the conference since they joined.
No.
So that'll be interesting. What do we think about Dan Mullen? Now, we've talked about how, and I like that Reynolds agreed with us last week during the match game, that we're starting to kind of, there's something a little bit likable about Burt. We don't like Dan Mullen, do we?
No, not at all.
There's just nothing likable about him at all. I mean, we started out not liking him, and nothing's changed.
No, and I think he, you know, last year's game certainly fueled that fire, and I just as soon see him lose. So I don't like him. And I, you know, again, I've said this before. I don't have a problem with State fans, and as a rule, the other big thing we talk a lot about how Auburn. We expect Auburn to improve. One of the main reasons is the coaching change, adding Muschamp. But there's a lot of other teams we're going to talk about tonight that have a negative impact coaching change.
And we talked about LSU before.
That's right. And so this is another example of that, where their defensive coordinator, who was really good the last 2 years, left and went to Florida, and they replaced him with Manny Diaz, who had been fired at Texas and there was a Louisiana Tech or wherever. And he's been to State before, and he did an okay job, good enough job to get him hired at Texas. But, you know, at Texas, he crashed and burned there. It was ugly at the end. So, and so you really, anytime you have a bunch of new starters and a new coordinator, you got to be nervous. And my other great thing I love about Mississippi State this offseason is their kicker, who was a good kicker, left the team to pursue a career in dentistry. Evan Sobiesk, so.
At least Wynn Lyle waited around to go pre-med until, you know, the medical school after he finished kicking for Auburn.
That's right.
Wow. That's, yeah. I could kick for Mississippi State, or I could fill cavities for people. I think I'm going to fill cavities. This is interesting. I don't know. Okay. Well, maybe, you know, big money. I mean, maybe he'll cash in.
One of the other things I always look at when teams are playing Auburn is, you know, the starters they had back and their coaching changes and stuff. The other thing I always look at is their schedule, who they play the week before they play us.
Right.
And they play Texas A&M in Starkville the week before they play Auburn. So I think we'll learn something from that game in terms of those two teams, and certainly we'll learn something about Mississippi State and their defense going up against that A&M offense.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. Very, very interesting. Absolutely. Okay, you ready to move on to game five?
I am.
The San Jose State, are they the Spartans?
They are the Spartans.
Now, they have had some ups and downs. They won 11 games 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But then their coach left, and last year they only went 3-9. That sounds familiar. Oh, teams that go 3-9 never do anything the next year. Unless they have a great, you know, former Auburn offensive coordinator. Uh-oh. They do have a former great Auburn offensive coordinator. Ah! Who is their offensive coordinator, John?
Al Borges.
Al Gorgeous Borges.
He's back.
The Auburners' favorite offensive coordinator. He's back. He's been he was at Michigan, was he not, for a little while there? And he was he's bounced around a little bit.
He has.
What do you think? I mean, should we fear the Borges?
I love Al Borges, like a lot of Auburn people, but no, I'm not really particularly worried about San Jose State. I mean, they they have eight starters back on offense, including the quarterback, but it's not a done deal that he's the guy. They got four guys back on defense, but they were maybe the worst team in the country at stopping the run last year.
Yeah.
And so I don't think they're going to be a lot better. And if you're playing in Auburn, that's a problem. Auburn beat them 59-13 last year.
And they have to come back.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know. I mean, this is a pick up a check game. You can't imagine that. Their running defense was really bad. Their quarterback, Joe Gray, there's just not a whole lot to say good about him. You got to think this is just a tune-up game before we go up on Thursday night. In fact, is that – we play San Jose State, then have the next Saturday off, and then go to Kentucky on Thursday, and then have that Saturday off. That's going to be a really weird stretch of the season right there, isn't it? Because, you know, we're going to start, you know, right out of the gate with Louisville, and then a couple of weeks later, you know, down in the bayou, and then immediately come back and have Mississippi State. So the first 4 weeks, it's like bang, bang, bang. But then we've got San Jose State, and then a week off, and then at Kentucky, and then another Saturday off. So it's a really bumpy – it's not very even, huh?
Mm-hmm. No, it's kind of weird. I mean, like October 3rd, San Jose State at home, then October 15th at Kentucky, and then October 24th at Arkansas.
Yeah, I wish that we had the San Jose State and the Mississippi State game swapped. Mm. So we could go to LSU and then have a week off, to LSU and then play San Jose State – then play Mississippi State, then have Saturday off, and then go to Kentucky on Thursday. That would be ideal, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be, I think?
It would, but I can also see this as a good game to get some of the younger guys in case we need them on these road games. So
you think we'll see a lot of Sean White?
I think we'll see a lot of everybody the second half of the San Jose State game.
I hope so. All right, well, let's move on. So Thursday night. It's a Thursday night game up in my neck of the woods that I'm not going to be able to go to. My buddy that's another history professor in our department that's a UK guy, he was just asking me the other day if I was going to go. And I said, well, I would like to, but I said, I've asked the Auburn administration, the athletic department people, to stop scheduling these games up here in my area on Thursdays. But I don't think they're listening to me. I don't think I have a lot of pull with these people. So they keep making, you know, me have to choose between my kids missing 2 days of school and me missing 2 days of work versus just coming home from work and watching it on TV. So I don't think we're going to be there.
What happens when we play Missouri and they schedule it on a Thursday night?
Oh, my gosh. They're going to do that, aren't they? I hadn't even thought of it until you said it. But you're absolutely right. They're going to do that. When the day finally comes that they play at Missouri, it's going to be a Thursday night game. Mark my words. It will. Well, you know what? I'm glad I'm not going to Kentucky then, because as much as that's a neat little trip and it's fun and I like the Kentucky people a good bit, because, you know, the Kentucky fans I don't like are Alabama fans that root for Kentucky basketball.
No. Yeah, but basketball fans, though.
But the actual Kentucky fans are mostly pretty cool. You know, I really liked hanging out with them in 2010. They were very nice. And not as nice as the Kansas State people, because that was just creepy how nice they were in a good way. But yeah, I hate not getting to go to Kentucky. But I guess I can put that in the bank, see? And then when we play at Missouri on a Thursday, as inevitably now is going to happen. Now you said that, I just know it's going to happen. It's inevitable. I can just say to my wife, well, you know, we didn't get to go to the last Thursday night game up here, .. And then I'll win, see.
Nice try.
I'm sticking that in my pocket. I'm putting that one in my pocket. All right. Kentucky plays Eastern Kentucky and then has a Saturday off before they play us. So basically they have from September 26 until October 15 to prepare for Auburn, John.
It's a lot of prep time, and this is a huge game for them. I mean, you know, they're in a season where they need to make some progress. You know, Stoops has done a good job there, but the fans want to see something other than, you know, 4 or 5 wins, and they want to, you know, break through and compete for the East title, or at least go to a bigger bowl. And this is the kind of game, a home game on a Thursday night, that could get all the fans fired up. So you know they're going to have a lot of stuff prepared for this game and a lot of focus on Auburn this season.
Well, they are led by their quarterback, Patrick Fluffy Towels. Patrick Beach Towels.
I think it's Towels.
Patrick Hand Towels. Patrick Paper Towels.
I think it's Towels.
Patrick Moist Towelettes.
When I say Auburn Thursday night game in Kentucky, what immediately comes to your mind?
I see old Fort Lauderdale himself out there booting that kick through, preparing, practicing for the national championship game.
Well, and I see Randall Cobb going crazy against us, too.
Randall Tex Cobb.
That's what I see.
That was crazy. That game, all right, for those that don't remember or it's kind of hazy, in the first half of the Auburn-Kentucky game in Cam Newton Stadium in CM Newton Stadium in 2010, in the first half, Cam basically just strolled up and down the field, scoring touchdowns at will, didn't he? Mm-hmm. I mean, he just looked easy. It looked easy. And then in the second half, suddenly our offense just, we decided we were up enough points and we pulled the Tuberville. And suddenly,
put it in cruise control, kind of.
Randall Tex Cobb just started scoring. They had a good quarterback, and they used that same play that killed us all season. The thing that mystified me was why Oregon didn't use this against us. Oregon came out and ran some kind of run option against us, which was stupid because we ate it up. But what the teams that came the closest, the two teams that came the closest to beating us in 2010, they both did it running lots and lots of screens, lots of slip screens and bubble screens. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
What two teams came the closest to beating us in the regular season in 2010? Or it came down to the last play, basically.
Kentucky and, well, I mean, you could say Alabama or Mississippi State, really. But
well, Clemson is one I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay, Clemson, you're right, yes.
And both Clemson and Kentucky just ate us up with those little slip screens. They had Kentucky's quarterback, I can't even remember his name now, but they had their quarterback, they had a decent running back, and they had Cobb, who kind of played everything, right? I mean, he kicked, he coached, he sold Cokes in the stands, he did everything. And those three guys, they ate us up in the second half, and we were lucky to get out of there. Can you imagine?
Cobb was amazing.
What's that?
Cobb was so impressive.
Can you imagine if we look back at 2010 and we said, man, 2010, we could have won the national championship. We beat Alabama, we beat Georgia, we beat LSU. We beat Arkansas with Petrino. If only we had not lost to Kentucky. Man, that would have been hard.
It's true. Mike Hartline was the quarterback.
Yeah. Hartline and Cobb. Those guys were really, really good. So all of which has blank all to do with when we go to play them on October 15th. So they got a new offensive coordinator coming in from West Virginia. What do we know about Shannon Dawson?
Well, they're going to do the same kind of air raid kind of thing they've been doing since Stoops has been there. So they like to, you know, in the direction of Texas A&M's offense, which will, in some ways it'll be good practice for them, but get the four wide receivers out there, one back, and operate out of the shotgun and do that kind of Mike Leach air raid passing tree stuff. So I think in some ways that our experience with A&M will help us prepare for them, but they have a good running back. This Boom guy is a good solid running back. And Tolles wasn't bad. I watched him play a good bit last year, and they were competitive with a lot of the good teams in the East. They're not getting blown off the field by people. So
no, I think they're going to be very solid. I had a Kentucky guy. I had a Kentucky guy on Twitter just go off on me like knee jerk reflexively, defensive. Like I mentioned something about the Cam Newton Stadium just as a joke. And he's like, oh, we're going to be good this year. Oh, you better watch out. I'm like, okay, sure. Yes, absolutely. You'll be fine. Good job, Kentucky. Sure. No problem. Anything else about Kentucky? I mean, they're a dangerous team. They beat us in 2009. I guess that was the only time they've beaten us in quite a long time. Modern era, ever, right? Once, that was it?
Yep.
All right. All right, that's Kentucky. I will not be there. I'll be watching on my TV at home. Arkansas. Now, this has the potential to be, I think, one of the most interesting games of the season. And I say that not because we beat their butts in the second half last year, but because of how they closed out the season many months later. Right? I mean, they were as impressive as anybody the last two or three games of the season.
Oh, they were. Their season was kind of a tale of two halves. I mean, the first part of the season, their offense was really good, but their defense wasn't great. The second half of the season, their defense was probably the best in the conference, and their offense was still solid, and they really, really rampaged through the West the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So we were lucky we caught them when we did.
Yeah.
And this year we get to go to their stadium, so I think it's going to be a very, very tough game.
Well, you know, everybody talks about what a great, you know, game the Auburn offense played in Jeremy Johnson the first half against Arkansas last year. Do you remember what the score was at halftime?
It was like, I can't remember, 24-3 or something?
No, it was 21-21.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, so as great of a game as Jeremy Johnson played, that game was 21-21 at the half. Our defense shut them down in the second half. We scored on them. We scored about as well in the second half as we did in the first half. The difference in that game was our defense shut their offense completely out in the second half. So I don't know if that's going to happen again.
Well, hopefully our defense will play better from the opening than, you know.
Right.
But I think this is one of those games where, and there's two or three of these on the schedule, where the physicality of Auburn's defense is going to be tested, where the front seven of defense is going to really, really get sledgehammered, and we're going to, you know, find out if they could take it or not. And this is one of these games. You know, they got a huge offensive line, the biggest in the country. They're going to take, in addition to those five guys, they're going to put, you know, two tight ends out there who both weigh 300 pounds, and they got a 250-pound fullback, you know, running in front of their 220-pound running back. So, you know, you can't have a bunch of 190-pound defensive guys out there trying to stop that. It's not going to work. So This is one of those games where, you know, the defensive linemen and the linebackers on Auburn defense are going to have to, you know, step in front of those guys and make plays and stop them. And the other thing is, I think the offense is just going to have to go out there and, you know, make plays and put up points and get us ahead. We don't want to get all Arkansas ahead of us so they can kind of run downhill at us and play keep away and stuff. So.
Run the clock out. Well, see, here's the difference. This is one of the great differences between these teams and the Tuberville teams is that in, you know, Houston Nutt's old teams, this looks a lot like one of Houston Nutt's old teams. And what they would do is they'd ring us up for 28, 35 points on the ground, you know, and we would be scoring about 17. Mm-hmm. Gus ain't going to score 17. I mean, they may ring us up for 21, 28 points, but we're going to ring them up for 28, 35, 42 points too, I think. So So it's not quite the aughts, the 06s, the 02. The 02 game still haunts my nightmares, that Arkansas game.
Absolutely.
Fred Talley?
God, he's still going.
He's still going. Yeah, he hadn't stopped. Anything else about Arkansas?
They get a bye week before they play us.
Yeah.
The week before that, they do play Alabama. So I think we'll learn a lot about them then. So that'll be interesting, that'll be in Tuscaloosa. So
I want you to imagine that Arkansas goes into Tuscaloosa and beats the Tide down.
Well, don't you think about that? If they beat them and then they go back home and have a week off and then we come to campus, I mean, that place is going to be bonkers.
Yeah, but they also have a whole week of everybody patting them on the back, telling them they're the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, but but the week off may help in that sense because it's a long time. If it was immediately, they'd probably still be coming down to earth by the time we got there. So,
is it for us or is it for Arkansas that
it's a trap?
Because I don't know. You tell me.
I don't think this kind of game is a trap for either one of us because we both see it coming. They both got a Saturday off beforehand. And I think both teams know, you know, who the other team is and what they got to do. So,
all right. Okay. Well, they've lost some of their defense, right? I mean, they graduated some of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, they lost some of their good defensive linemen that made a bunch of plays last year, Trey Flowers and Darius Philon and some of those guys that were, really strong up front. But they still got five starters back, and they got some high recruiter guys and some JUCO guys are going to step in there. So, this is another case where they have a coordinator change. Their offensive coordinator, his name is Jim Chaney, left and went to be the offensive coordinator at Pittsburgh, which just seems
– Is that a lateral move?
No, I mean he clearly thought it was a good move for him.
But wow.
I think sometimes when a team runs a lot of I-formation power football kind of stuff, people think it's really simple and the offensive coordinator's not doing a lot. But he was really, really good last year at mixing it up. And using the unbalanced line and the extra tight ends and all that kind of stuff to get the other team in a position where they could really pound on them. And, sometimes the offensive coordinators show how smart they are by not being clever and tricky and stuff.
Oh, I agree.
And I think Chaney did a great job with that. And now he's gone and they replaced him. He actually hired a head coach away from a MAC team named Dan Enos to be the new offensive coordinator. But I think this could be a case where Chaney could be missed because he was really, really good at executing this, what they wanted to do last year.
Yeah. Yeah, remember how Arkansas dropped off after Gus left?
Mm-hmm. So. I'm just saying that the offense might be the same, but it's just something to watch. Or when they start playing tough games, is the offense quite as good as it was last year at the play calling and mixing it up and keeping the other team off balance and stuff?
I got one other Arkansas factoid for you. I'll be ready to move on.
All right.
What do you suppose the combined score of Arkansas, LSU, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Arkansas, Texas was to close out the season last year? I have the combined score of those three games.
Oh, I remember they beat the crud out of all of them, so it's like 90 to nothing.
78-7.
Ish.
Wow.
Yes, I'm saying. I'm glad we didn't play them at the end. Because they were on fire.
Yeah, they really were. So, all right. Ole Miss, the Black Bears,
it's a trap.
Those guys. I'm getting a lot of use out of Admiral Ackbar tonight, aren't I?
You are.
This is a very Star Wars-centric episode so far. I may have my theme for the title of this episode when we're done.
There you go.
I may very well. I should have had more Star Wars sound effects on the board tonight, but I don't. So I got one I'm saving, keeping in my back pocket for next week. Or week after next, actually. We will not be on the air next week. I'm going to be with my family on vacation in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. So we're going to go down there and eat lots of waffles and pancakes and other carbohydrate products. Because
I'm going to consume all of this at the same time because I am a free American.
That's what I'm going to be saying a lot when we get to Gatlinburg next week. But anyway, so when we come back in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about the big three, the big three, the big two, and Idaho.
Well, you're going to call it the big three. Amen corner, whatever you want to call it.
When you include, potato quality, I guess it does fit the big three. All right, so Ole Miss, we play Arkansas, we get hammered and hammered and hammered and hammered and hammered, and then we turn around and come home and face Ole Miss, which again begs the question,
it's a trap.
Is it?
No, just because I think – here's why I think it's not, because I think – I think Ole Miss is going to be, to me, probably the third best team in the West behind Auburn and Alabama. I think they're going to be really good. And this is a home game on Halloween.
Oh, we love those.
There's nothing better than a good home game on Halloween in Auburn. It is going to be great. It'll be the night game at ESPN probably, and it will be bonkers there.
I remember my first in Jordan-Hare Stadium night game on Halloween. You were probably there too. Do you remember it?
Was it Florida?
Florida 1987. The Nightmare in Jordan-Hare.
That was such a great game.
Oh, the immovable object, Andre Bruce, the irresistible force, Emmett Smith. And the irresistible force got resisted. he went 0-3 for that career. Emmett Smith and
Tim Tebow combined 0-5 against Auburn. I love it. Oh, throw in Urban Meyer combined 0-7 against Auburn at Florida. Yeah, so we play Arkansas, then we come home and on Halloween night face Ole Miss. They have just played Texas A&M the week before they play us, so maybe that kind of, I don't know, we'll, does that balance out at all, or are we be beaten down and they'll not, or I don't know what to think. If who does that favor? I guess it favors them, doesn't it?
No, I mean, I think in some ways I think it's good for us in that we'll have seen how A&M attack their defense and, you know, what worked and didn't work. So I think that'll be good for us.
I got a couple of mini. I'm going to do a regular one in a minute, but I have a couple of miniature
Factoid of the Week.
All right. One factoid of the week. You'll love this. Since Eli Manning 12 years ago, okay? Since Eli Manning quarterbacked the Black Bears 12 years ago, no Ole Miss quarterback has thrown single-digit interceptions.
Wow.
Every Ole Miss quarterback has thrown double-digit interceptions every year since Eli Manning.
Wow.
That's good. The other thing, their new quarterback, Chad Kelly, is a nephew of Jim Kelly, or as your wife liked to call him, Bill Kelly. I loved it.
She still beat us all in fantasy football.
I know. I say that to cover up my humiliation at getting crushed by her. But anyway, so Chad Kelly, this is a transfer, right? He ran into some trouble with the law and stuff in Clemson, wasn't it?
Right, he was in Clemson. He was, you know, would have been the, you know, competing for the starting job, but Deshaun Watson, he got kicked off the team, left, and went to junior college for a year, and now he's at Ole Miss. And, you know, he has a lot of talent, was a highly recruited guy, and they think he may end up being better than Bo Wallace in terms of, you know, not making as many stupid mistakes and being more consistent.
Right.
The biggest thing that you and I have seen with Ole Miss the last 2 years is they can't run the ball between the tackles, and when, especially when they get ahead, they have a great defense, but they can't run the ball and keep the other team off the field, and or get, you know, first downs to string them together when they have to. When the, you know, the other team expects pass, they're more of a soft kind of spread team, and that's something they're going to have to really improve on if they're ever going to, you know, break through and win the West. I just don't think they can do it with the kind of running game they have.
They look like 1999 Auburn. They really need that Rudy Johnson to arrive and give them that extra dimension. Yeah, they are kind of – and it's interesting, too, is that, you know, because Muschamp has said that his goal for our defense this year is he believes our strength will be stopping the run with the front seven, and he wants to make teams one-dimensional. Well, Ole Miss comes into the stadium one-dimensional.
Well, I mean, he says
mission,
that.
Mission accomplished. They get off bus. I'm good.
I mean, there are teams Auburn plays, you know, LSU, Arkansas, Alabama. Those teams are going to line up and pound Auburn with running the ball.
Yeah.
And there are teams Auburn plays that are going to go the other direction completely. And I think probably, you know, Mississippi State's going to be doing that with Dak Prescott. Ole Miss is 100% going to do that, and A&M's going to do that.
Yeah.
And probably Louisville to some extent because it's Petrino. So I really think, you know, there's not a lot of balanced offenses Auburn faces. It's going to be all one way or the other.
Right. Well, I guess my last thought about Ole Miss, their defense is still going to be very, very good. The old Land Sharks, you know. But they rely so heavily on their quarterback because of that running game situation that they have to hope the new one is serviceable. And you know, if the quarterback has big issues, so goes the whole team, I think.
It's true. I mean, if Kelly's not great, then they're in real trouble. I mean, because the offense does depend on him so much. This team has – if they had a great quarterback, they could win the West. You know, if they had Dak Prescott or Jeremy Johnson, whoever, they could. I'm not sure Kelly is that good. So we'll see. If he's going to be solid, he may be – you know, good enough. Maybe he'll be turned into like a, you know, come out and be like a more of a game manager and just not make the dumb mistakes that Bo Wallace did at times. And if he does that, you know, they have plenty of talent to beat a lot of teams.
Well, I think that's why there's so much disagreement and uncertainty about the SEC West, is that every team has – you can look at parts of every team and say, oh, they've got that. They're going to be awesome. They could win the conference, you know, the division. And then there's something about every team that you can point to and say, but then there's that. And in a lot of cases, it's the quarterback. It's not for us. For us, it's the secondary, I think, mainly. But for a lot of teams, it's the quarterback. And – And I think Ole Miss is the one that's the most vulnerable. In other words, Alabama could have this Kelly dude play their, be their quarterback, and they wouldn't drop off that much because they got so much else. But with Ole Miss, you need that to work or you're in deep trouble.
Well, and the difference is because Alabama, it's much more of a you hand the ball off a guy out of the way kind of thing. Yeah. Ole Miss, he's got to make the whole offense go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they have great receivers. They have a really, really good group of receivers coming back, and it's going to be it's going to cause problems.
Yeah. Well. Lastly, and I think this is the most interesting one, perhaps for tonight, Texas A&M. I've had interesting conversations with some A&M friends and with some other people, even last day or two on Twitter. Some people have asked me about A&M. I find them the most intriguing. I think that they've got a downside, but I think that in some ways they potentially have the most upside of anybody besides us. They're kind of mirror image of us in some ways.
They are. I mean, their offense is going to be great. I think they have great talent at receiver. They have they have two good quarterbacks probably and some good running backs. Their offensive line's not bad. You're right. They should score a ton of points, mm-hmm. but their defense was even worse than Auburn's.
Even worse than ours. Yeah. They're coming from an even lower place. And, I mean, Chavis is really good. I don't know if he's any better than Muschamp. And I don't know if they have enough raw material, as much raw material to work with as we did. I feel like our talent on defense was such that, and certainly with what we have coming back, like with Carl Lawson and with the new guys, we have the raw material to make a major step up. I don't know that they do, other than, of course, Myles Garrett, right?
Right, and I love Myles Garrett. He's you know, my favorite defensive player not on Auburn's team to watch. I think he's an absolute monster, and he's going to cause all kinds of problems. But I think you made the right point. Their defense was so bad that even if they're better, better is relative, and they might go from, like, awful to just, you know, poor.
you know what we're cheering for this week, fellas? Let's go out there and be poor. Woo!
Well, let me put it this way, okay? Their defense was really, I think, the worst in SEC history in terms of total yards and yards per play.
Good Lord.
They were so bad, they made the 2012 Auburn defense look good. And I mean, really. They gave up like 70 more yards a game than the 2012 Auburn defense.
Well, you know, they were that bad. Thank goodness they didn't come into Jordan-Hare and beat us. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, again, what happened in that game? Field goal return for touchdown. You know, blown coverages led to long touchdowns in their passing game, and then two fumbles at the end. That's what it took for us to lose that game.
A bunch of crap happened to us in that game is what happened, and we still should have won. So, you know.
That's right. So, I think it's going to be a tough place to play. They've expanded their stadium, and we have to go out there. But I think the loss last year – has to bug all the returning players on Auburn's team.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to know they were better than that team, and it really derailed their season. So I think but you're right in the sense that they are kind of a mirror image of us. And in the best-case scenario, say Chavis does turn that defense around, they could be a team that challenges for the West title.
Well, that's what my A&M friend was saying was, you know, how is Auburn getting all this love for being like national championship contenders? It's like, what are they doing that we're not? I'm like, well, you know, I said, I'm not prepared to tell you you're wrong yet. You know, I think A&M will be much improved. I think that A&M could end up finishing above Ole Miss, finishing above LSU, not to mention Mississippi State. I think they could finish in the top three or four on the West. I don't have a problem with that at all. So now, go ahead.
I was going to say, to me, like, I would put the West this way. Like, I think Auburn and Alabama are in a tier, and then I think, like, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and A&M, to me, are in a tier. And I think LSU and state are at the bottom. But because A&M, you're right, they could finish seventh or they could finish first or second, even if things go perfectly. So,
Kyler Murray, their top rated dual threat quarterback they're bringing in. That's the interesting thing I read about him is he's a baseball top prospect. Mm-hmm. And they were saying he could end up going off and playing baseball or something. That's the only two quarterbacks they have. What's his name? You know, the dude from last year is gone. He left.
Yeah, the guy who was the Heisman runner-up, Heisman contender after week one.
Week one and then left the team, yeah. Kenny Hill.
Kyler Murray, you know, was the high school successor to Johnny Manziel, basically, in Texas high school football. And a lot of people think, you know, he's kind of the next Johnny Manziel. So some people honestly expect him to compete for the starting job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, everything I've heard, he sounds pretty This is one other interesting thing about Texas A&M. I think Sumlin addressed the three areas of biggest problems, because I'll point out, every season since they joined the SEC, their win totals have gone down. Mm-hmm. They've won fewer games every year since Sumlin started and they joined the SEC. But I would say they had three problems. Obviously, defense, they hired John Chavis. They had problems with the running game. They brought in a new running game coach. And their receivers kept dropping easy passes, and they brought in a new receivers coach. So, I mean, I give Sumlin credit that it looks like he's gone out and very, very surgically addressed their three main areas of concern.
One of those guys left. He's the receivers coach is the head coach at Kansas now, so he didn't have any choice in that one. But, No, you're right. I mean, the defense thing was a gigantic weakness, and he went and, you know, like with Gus going after Muschamp. I mean, someone looked around and said, "I got to get the best guy," and he went and got Chavis. And you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I was afraid they were going to get Muschamp. So I'm glad that Chavis went there, and I'm glad we got Muschamp. And I think both teams will be the better for it. So, any other thoughts about A&M?
No, just that it's going to be an exciting game, that's for sure. I mean, these two offenses get together in the field, I think it's going to be really, really entertaining. So,
all right. Well, we've covered games 4 through 9. Let's quickly get in. Let's see if do we have any.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right. What have we got?
All right, you ready? We're going to do rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
From AU Tweet, what keeps Will Muschamp awake at night? Our lack of interior defensive lines or ever shrinking secondary?
It's got to be the secondary. I mean, he said he wants to make other teams one dimensional and have to throw on us, but then he's got to start getting the sweats thinking about what happens when they do.
I think you're probably right. All right, this one comes from Auburn Fan Attic. Who says, does Peyton Barber become the short yardage and goal line back and the ball control back as the game goes along?
You know, in a Pat Dye offense or maybe in a Tommy Tuberville offense, I would have said absolutely. But I have I get the sense with Gus and Rhett that they just kind of pick their one guy to be the everything back, and the others are kind of like, you know, you'll have a speed guy or whatever. But we don't really seem to get focused on a goal line back. I mean, do you remember us ever kind of under Gus, the first or second time, having one guy that's kind of serves that short yardage goal line running back role?
No, not really.
I mean, other than Cam, but I mean, he was everything.
Even we had, you know, big fullback guys like Eric Smith, not really. So
no, they still use Fannin and Dyer and just Trey Mason and Cameron Harris Payne. It's usually just the same back that got us down the field. So, I mean, it would be kind of neat. I would like for them to have a role where they, you know, I'd like for him to have a role if he's not the feature back. But that just doesn't seem to be the way Gus does it.
No. Yeah, so. All right. Jacob Fleming says, what player could be a surprise standout on D this season?
Surprise standout on D? The third linebacker?
Trey Williams, or who do you think?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, so to explain real quickly in like two sentences or less, this buck position – like if Byron Cowart or Carl Lawson, whoever's playing Buck, are they going to be on the end of the defensive line, like a fourth lineman in a 3-4, or are they going to be more of a linebacker or what? Or are they not going to replace one of the linebackers? That's the thing I'm kind of shaky on still.
It's more of like a defensive end, outside linebacker hybrid kind of thing, okay, where they're mostly going to be rushing the passer. Or being playing a regular defensive end, and they'll play with their hand on the ground some, but they'll also kind of sometimes take a step back and be more of an outside linebacker. And when they step back, will become kind of a 3-4, like the, mm-hmm, and they'll be kind of like a Pittsburgh Steelers outside linebacker. So, and the guys they had at Florida were very successful at that and made a lot of plays. And there's some, you know, whether it's Lawson or whether it's with some of these younger guys, Jeff Holland maybe filling in that role. I think that could be it. It'll be interesting to see how Auburn uses it this year. But I think it's really, it's going to be a lot of plays, especially when you play the running oriented teams where you're not going to be able to tell a lot of difference.
Well, the other two that come really quickly to mind, maybe a couple of the freshman defensive backs, if we really need them, are supposed to be very talented and think they, mm-hmm, can play right away. And also, who's the defensive lineman freshman that's been really good in practice and they think is going to come in and be a monster on the defensive line? There's like three guys whose names are so similar that I get them confused. There's like Devontae's and, you know,
Devereaux Lawrence and Devontae Lambert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At least one of them, they've been saying, really is coming along fast and could be a force on the line, and we certainly need that. You know, once we lose Montrevious Adams, I mean, we're going to be really hurting for big dudes in the trenches there. So,
all right, next question. What's the over on this is from Bradley Blackman? What's the over under on Jeremy Johnson's rushing yards?
Jeremy Johnson's rushing yards? I'm going to say the over under is 500.
I think that's fair. I think, you know, in college they subtract the sacks from the rushing yards.
Mm.
So I think that could lower that number because I do think, unlike Nick Marshall, there's going to be some sacks and he's going to lose some ground. But I would say, you know, 450.
You know, I was going to say 450, and then I thought if you say 450, everybody's going to go over.
Okay.
Is that not right?
That's fair.
If you say 450, I think most people say, oh, he's going to get more than 450. But if you say 500, now they're like, oh, I don't know if he's going to get more than 500. See? Yeah, you know, so that's because that's about 40, 50 yards a game, isn't it?
It is, and it's
– and you know he's not going to run at all against Idaho and San Jose, so it starts getting harder to get those 500 yards, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, he's not going to average as many, you know, yards a carry as Nick Marshall did. Last year Nick Marshall averaged almost 12 yards a carry. So, I mean, Jeremy Johnson isn't going to do that.
No, he's not.
So, all right. Next question comes from Matt Morton, who says, as of right now, which game concerns you the most? He says, for him, it's trying to get over the hump of finally beating LSU in Baton Rouge.
I think we're going to beat LSU in Baton Rouge. I really do. And if we don't, then the season isn't what we kind of hoped it would be. I know that 2013 it worked out, but I don't know if we can count on that happening twice. I think the game that is concerning me most right now is Arkansas. But I've got to be honest and tell you that because I just don't want to lose to them, and I think they're going to be good enough to beat us if things go that way. But, of course, I just want to beat Alabama and Georgia. They all concern me. Oh, no. But, yeah, I think that probably just from a strategic and tactical standpoint, looking at from the beginning of the season, because I'm not even worried about Georgia and Alabama right now. I'm not even worried about them. Their day will come. Right now, I'm concerned about the piglets, the pork products.
No, I think you have to. I mean, winning on the road in the SEC is always the single hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
So you have to look at those road games and go, you know, that they were, you know, that's going to be a tough road to hoe right there.
That is.
All right. Our next one comes from Tony Barnhard.
I've heard of
him. Who says, "Who are your sleepers this year?" He suggests Jason Smith on offense and Trey Williams on defense.
Well, Trey maybe, but Jason Smith, see this again. They'll put him in three plays in the first three games, one play each in the next two games, and you won't see him again this season. I hope that's not true, but I always hope that, and I'm always disappointed. Gus just likes his vanilla ice cream, you know, his bread and butter. For all this talk that he runs a gimmick offense and the bells and whistles and all that, you and I both know, and I think our listeners are smart enough to know, that a lot of that's a smokescreen, and Gus is a hard-nosed vanilla when he can do it, right? When he can get away with it, he's very very straightforward, and I just don't see a player like Jason Smith getting a lot of touches.
You know who I think is could be on offense?
Who?
Chandler Cox.
That's a good thought.
Because he's going to be that fullback, H-back mm-hmm. kind of role, be lead blocker a lot of the time, but also catch a few passes,
mm-hmm.
And then occasionally maybe get a handoff. So I like him as maybe a sleeper guy on offense to make some plays.
Yeah, and I think that some of our younger receivers are going to step up because Jeremy's going to be humming that ball all over the field, and it's not all going to – it's not all going to
– certainly Duke is Duke.
And it's not all going to Ricardo. There's going to be some other people catching that ball.
No, you're right. It's fair.
Any other questions?
Two more. All right. Or one more. Last question comes from Rusty Owens, who says, who do you see as the team MVP at the end of the year? Would it be Jeremy Johnson or Muschamp?
Well, I mean, they both got to do their part, don't they?
Yeah.
That's like two oars in the water, and if only one of them's rowing, we're just going in a circle. How you like that? Look at me. I mean, Jeremy's going to do his thing. The trick this year is not making him have to score 50 points a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Let's see. Last bit.
Factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
All right, I got two quick factoids for you. I looked at our offense. When we talked about all the points that Arkansas scored and did not give up at the end of their season, I looked at our Texas A&M, Alabama, and Wisconsin games last year. How many yards do you suppose combined A&M, Alabama, and Wisconsin? No, I'm sorry. This is looking at how many yards we gained. How many yards did we gain last season against Texas A&M, Alabama, and Wisconsin?
1,647
yards, and in those three games we averaged 549 yards a game. We averaged 27 first downs. We averaged 38 points a game, and we averaged 20 scoring. And we had 20 total scoring drives. And we did what? We lost all three games. That's why Will Muschamp is going to be the single most important individual involved in college football this year when he gets us to the national championship game. Let's see. Here's my other factoid real quick. In 2010, John, in 2010, Chelsea won the premiership in England. And the national title game that season was played in Phoenix. Well, guess what? This year, Chelsea, for the first time since 2010, won the premiership, and the national championship game is going to be played in Phoenix. This is irrefutable.
That sounds like a pattern to me.
Irrefutable. There you go. It's irrefutable. All right. I would say we usually do our Around the SEC, but I think we already kind of did that. Is there any other Around the SEC things we want to throw in here? We've run way over tonight.
No.
We knew we would. We had six games to preview. We knew we were going to run long. So, and we'd usually do what have we learned. I think what we've learned is that our wives are going to kill us if we don't come to bed. So let's go ahead and wrap up. Decades of Dominance, Season of Our Dreams are still out there. We got to do another book. We need to complete the trilogy.
We do.
We'll do it. Contact us as usual via Twitter at AU Wishbone. Go on Amazon, pick up Decades of Dominance. Thanks to everybody that came to Birmingham last couple of days ago and bought Decades and got me to sign it for them. Otherwise, John, I think we're about done. Any last thoughts before we head out?
No, other than talking about the season, it's exciting.
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm going to go find whatever games are still on my DVR from when they did the top 20 games and watch a few before I go to bed. So, All right, our time is up. As always, we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.